This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. If you need any more information, head to FUBARradio.com.
Ian Bolton on FUBAR Radio.
We'll talk about that another time. To the show. It's Monday, it's 14 o'clock, and it's started now. Weird thing, as usual, me and Nat were in the middle of another conversation that isn't suitable for air, so sorry, we've got to regather ourselves. Hello. Coming up at 2:30, we have journalist and documentary maker Ben Zand in the studio. He's going to be discussing his recent BBC iPlayer documentary, Into R. Kelly. That's what it's called, apparently. That's how I've read that. I've read it that it's called Into R. Kelly and His Alleged Sex Cult. So we'll be talking about that comedy show soon. Then at 3:15, old friend of mine Sarah Milton will be in the studio. My old friend Sarah.
Yeah.
Known her for many a year.
It's nice.
In the studio ahead of her run of a one-woman show, Tumble Tuck, at the King's Head Theatre in Islington.
It's true.
I don't know what we'll talk about. We were chatting only last night. Also coming up on the show, we'll be discussing what Nat's just asked me, which is...
Let me know if your tea tastes like cake.
There you go. That's what I'm dealing with. Welcome to the show. So, what's the cake situation, Nat?
I believe it's a sponge in the kitchen.
Oh, yes, okay. Well, that's all sorted out.
Makes the tea taste sweet sometimes.
Well, I didn't have a tea because I had... Why is the phone ringing? Who's calling us?
Oh, I don't know.
What? Oh, it'll be what's her fucking place,
won't it? Oh, it's Harriet, isn't it?
What time? What one? One or two?
One.
Hey, beautiful.
Hi there.
Hi.
On this dull and rainy day...
Say again.
Grey and overcast. I asked myself, can this day get any worse? Ian.
Well, why did you call me then?
Because you haven't come to see the show.
I sent you a picture on Twitter of when I met you after the show.
You think that makes it okay?
Yeah, it was me and you there. I was kissing you on the cheek. Consensually.
What little world are you in? This is a cosmopolitan world. We get up, we go out, we do things.
Yeah.
I'm a woman of maturity, barely 30.
Do you know what? I think that's part of it for me. I honestly do.
I'm barely 30.
Yeah, but just that, you know, you kind of like... I think it's the experience, I think.
That you have none.
I have. And do you know what the issue is? For me, the issue is...
Surprise me.
No, fine.
You've hit
the nail on the head.
I'm hearing a whining sound again.
With my wealth of experience, it's very difficult for me to find someone who can match or, more importantly, surpass that. And I feel like you would. Nobody teaches me things anymore.
Do.
Yeah.
All I'm going to say, darling, is
that was a yes.
This will not stop.
Okay.
This will never
good.
Stop.
Good.
You have to come to see the show.
I have been three times, though.
Well, let me ask you about the second act, then.
Do you want me to give away
What's
the second act?
What's your favourite bit of what I do in the second act?
I've told you all of it. Well, actually, what I will say is I have a new favourite bit.
Oh,
of what you do in the second act. But the problem with it is, A, it's inappropriate for me to say that to a lady... I think it gives away more about me than it does about you.
Hashtag you know nothing.
That I was thinking
you know
that.
Nothing.
And two,
I'm hearing the whining sound, darling.
And
my
two,
violin's out.
I think
I'm
it,
so sorry.
It gives away stuff about the play, and I don't want to do that. I think that would be bad form on my part as an artiste.
Yeah, so it's so kind of you not to do spoilers.
Thank
but
you.
The spoiler is you. You that have not been to see the show.
Right.
So don't cross me. I've had to ring and warn you several times now, but it will not stop.
Is this going to be our relationship? Because, again, I've never done this before, but I kind of like it.
Yeah. This is as good as it gets.
Oh, God.
and this dull and rainy day.
I'm sorry.
Has got no better.
Look,
I've nothing to say to you.
I'm sorry, I've been a bad boy.
Yeah, you have. Put the phone down, please. Nothing
okay.
to say.
Goodbye.
I'm sorry.
Goodbye.
Bye. That's Harriet Thorpe there. Regular.
I can't present when I'm partially engorged.
Regular to the show now.
What's their show again? I've been three times. What's it called? Oh, look at you all. So you're all so proud of your practical joke that you don't even know what the show's called, do you not?
Toby knows.
I know what it's called. But I'm not going to say, I won't want you to say it. What's the show called that we're trying to sublimely promote? You might well all have uncomfortable looks on your faces. What's the show called?
I'm finding it.
Should I pop a song on while you go and find it? I'll pop a song on while you go and find it. Because we've got a sort of implied paedophile inference in today's show, which wasn't my choice at all. I'm going to put on the song Calendar Girl by Neil Sedaka,
okay.
Which I think...
Ruthless.
I think if you watch this... Look, she's ringing back. Right to be fucking livid if she's ringing back. I think the song Calendar Girl gives itself up in that the girl, the eponymous girl in question, is underage.
Okay.
And I think from memory, how it gives itself up is like sort of August or something. It says it's her 16th birthday.
Oh, sweet 16.
But he's been cracking on with her.
Has he...
All this time.
Okay.
Just let's listen carefully to the lyrics.
I will do. I love my calendar girl. Yeah, sweet calendar girl.
I like the candles at your sweet 16. You go. There we go. It's absolutely busted.
So
September, I like the candles on your sweet 16.
Oh.
Yet in February, she's his Valentine, and in March, he wants to walk her down the aisle.
Oh no! What in the world? I love my little calendar girl
every day. I love my calendar girl. That all right? Is it? Is that all right?
I don't think it's okay. If she was 15, but let me see what he's been doing.
February, you're my little Valentine. March, I'm going to march you down the aisle.
March you.
April, you're the Easter bunny when you smile.
Mm.
Okay, that's borderline.
June.
May, there is no May, so God knows what they're getting up to in May. Or May be if I ask your dad and mom, so maybe that's the thing.
If they
so
can take him to junior prom.
So he's doing the classic thing of he is engaging the parents. June, they'll let me take to your... Then let me take you to the junior prom. Who lets
the parents
him?
That's why you say maybe if I ask your dad and mom in June they'll let me take you to the junior prom.
July like a firecracker all aglow. August when you're on the beach you steal the show.
Oh, she's in skimpy bikini.
And then he kills a bit of time with yeah my heart's in a whirl and all that stuff and then just drops the bombshell September I light the candles at your sweet 16.
No.
She's been 15 for all of that song. The bunny, the getting married.
But hold on, if
Valentine's Day.
But
showing the lot on the beach.
If he's marrying her, right?
Cracking on to her parents, taking her to a junior prom. No one's batted an eyelid.
Okay, is there a senior prom as opposed to a junior prom?
Then they're doing Romeo and Juliet on Halloween.
They die.
Gives thanks that you belong to me in November. Yeah, right.
You're the present underneath my Christmas tree.
Gives a statement, mate.
She's the present. Now he owns her.
Yeah.
She's the present underneath his Christmas tree.
Yeah.
Why?
It's going to be hard, this, isn't it? Going from this sort of rather jovial, jocular way of dealing with paedophiles to actually talking about the R. Kelly thing.
Well, when in March, and this song Calendar Girl, I don't like the I'm going to march you down the aisle. It sounds like it's force. Because the husband doesn't march you down the aisle. It'd be the dad,
because
wouldn't it?
Because she's not of a legal age where she can make up her own decisions anyway.
So he's dragging her down the aisle?
It sounds that way.
Right, and also I don't understand this junior prom.
Then he dresses her up as a bunny.
She's dressed as a bunny being marched
forces
down.
Forces her to smile.
What's the junior prom? Do you ever have a prom? I didn't go to a prom.
No, they didn't.
So is there a senior prom if there's a junior prom?
I presume so.
Otherwise...
Proms aren't really a thing. Well, maybe they are now, but they never used to be a thing in the UK, did they?
No, not really. Maybe the junior prom was just for him and her.
So are we banning this song or what? Should we start a Twitter campaign to ban Calendar Girl?
Bit much,
it's on the Deadpool soundtrack.
Yeah, it is, in the montage scene.
I noticed earlier on when I was first presenting this to you as an idea about Calendar Girl that you went onto the internet and typed in underage in a Google search. Which I would argue you should never, ever do.
I take that on board and I will not
never.
Do that again.
So you had the word girl and underage.
I had calendar girl underage.
But you had the word girl and underage in a Google search, didn't
you?
Not only that, at work.
Well, because I'm interested that I can't find anything about anyone else picking
up on this. I'd
still
argue it's gross misconduct.
Some people must have...
I'd still argue it's a sackable
offence. If you see some of the other things that have been Googling on other shows here, that's nothing.
I've seen the stuff you've Googled on my show.
When
I'm trying to present and then suddenly there's a big picture of somebody's balls all blown up on the screen.
Yeah, that's because for features on other shows, they do a lot of porn features.
That was what I was saying about self-inflation.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
You don't need to show me. I understand.
Oh, but
just
I needed
the words.
To see it.
No, but you don't just... That's not a defence in a court of law. You can't go in a court of law saying, we've got this Google search that says underage girl, and you can't go, oh, no, I was doing something for a show. That's right. The same argument that was put forward by... What's-his-face, wasn't it?
No,
the guitar man said he was researching a book.
Yes, I know the one you mean. Yeah. But I'm surprised that not other people... When was this song out? 1960?
Don't care when it was out. It's not all right.
May not have thought about this. I bet this still gets played on some radio stations.
I bet it does as well. I don't know.
Done any other ones?
The whole thing just makes me a little bit uncomfortable. That's all. Who's this Neil Sedaka?
Yeah.
Neil Sedaka's kind of well known.
What's he done there apart from that?
He's
still going. He's 79.
Yeah. I think he still performs Sedaka, doesn't he?
Lives in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
What else has he got?
I don't think he wrote Calendar Girl.
Well, let's look at his personal life, see who he got married to.
Oh, my God, this could be awful.
Him and his wife, Lieber, have been married since 1962. Do you think she was the calendar girl?
Because
the song was out in 1960.
Again, what you're doing here is you're taking an idea and turning it into something potentially libelous.
Well, I don't know. But, no, well, actually,
Implicating the gentleman. I never implicated the gentleman at any point.
Well, you're saying that it's not actually, though, is it? That there have been... do you remember Jerry Lee Lewis married his... it is legal in some parts of America. The age of consent in many different countries...
Well, that's an interesting point, isn't it? About the legality of it. So you can't... Can you... Well, I was going to say you can't, but I don't think that's true. Can you enforce your own sensibilities onto, like, I guess there'd be countries where you can marry someone at like 12 or something, I would imagine.
I would need
to
look
that up. Or whether there's no age of consent.
There has to be an age of surely.
No, I'm sure. I bet you in some country somewhere there isn't.
Because I know Trull, do you remember? T-Bomb, when he used to be here with his trombone.
Yeah.
14 in his country.
All right.
No,
That wasn't in relation to the comment. That was actually him. That's the only reason I did that.
Wow.
I wasn't saying that that's all right. I wasn't talking about a 14-year-old age of consent and then giving it.
All right.
I'm going to doubly emphasise this. That is Trull's doing that. That's the joke. Fucking hell.
Let's get off it. It's his subject. His birthday last week.
That's nice.
He went to the airport to pick his mum and dad up. That's what he did.
Good story.
He told me.
Is a song by Neil Sedaka. The music was composed by Sedaka and the lyrics by Howard Greenfield.
Who's this Howard fella?
So this is who we need to... He's died.
He's dead.
This is who we need to...
address.
Died age 49 in 1986. Mm. I'm not saying good, because it's not good.
No, it's not good.
But you wonder what sort of stresses he'd put himself under.
He wrote Breaking Up... No, Everybody's...
Amarillo he wrote that, famously.
Breaking Up is Hard to Do. Love Will Keep Us Together. Oh, Captain and Tennille, that's a banger.
Do you want to be in my gang? He wrote that one.
No, he didn't. He wrote Stairway to Heaven.
Hello, it's good to be back. I think he wrote that one.
No, he didn't. He did write Happy Birthday, Sweet 16. What's that?
Oh, look, he also wrote Tie My Kangaroo Down. And Jake the Peg.
He's got another song called Happy Birthday, Sweet 16.
Yeah.
The hell?
Should we find it?
This is a Neil Sedaka. He wrote it for Neil Sedaka.
I don't know how we jump from this.
Can I ask what the B-side is called? Don't Lead Me On. The hell is going on?
I think this is bad radio.
Well, it is just you searching. They won't be on the system, I don't think.
Well, Calendar Girls was.
Oh, that's true.
I don't know.
Happy Birthday, Sweet 16.
Isn't it? Happy Birthday, Sweet 16. Is it that one?
Yes, possibly.
Yeah, I think it's that one.
I'd like to know what Don't Lead Me On the lyrics are.
But I've not got a problem with Happy Birthday, Sweet 16. Because you can say Happy Birthday to someone
that's
16.
Fine.
It depends what he was doing in the year up to it. Because if Calendar Girls is anything to go by, it's going to be like, Happy Birthday, Sweet 16. It reminds me of when you were 15 and your birthday then, when I was doing it with you.
No, there was no implication that he was doing it.
Leading her down the aisle.
Marching her.
Imagine marching her down the aisle.
We're getting married, I'm marching you down the aisle. Be like, can I walk?
I would imagine that when you get married, if and when you get married, that you will have to march someone down the aisle, possibly with a shotgun. Pregnant and with a shotgun.
Yes.
That's what I reckon is going to happen with you.
Tonight's the night I've waited for, because you're not a baby anymore. You've turned into the prettiest girl I've ever seen. Happy Birthday, Sweet 16.
Right. So this is even worse now. Because in that song, he's acknowledging...
Yeah, he's waited for. Tonight's the night I've waited for.
Actually acknowledging...
You're not a kid anymore.
That you can't do it up to that point. Yet in his Calendar Girl song, it's all very blasé, isn't it? Oh, you're my Valentine. No, not you're my Valentine,
well,
no touching.
Take that this turn. When you were six, only six, I was your big brother. Hope not legally. Then when you were 10, we didn't like each other. When you're 13, you were a funny Valentine. But since you've grown up, your future is sewn up. From now on, you're going to be mine. Again, ask her. Don't tell her.
I don't... Nah, I think that's the least of the issues with that song.
It's a lot going on here, really, isn't there?
I think tone of voice is the least
You're
of the issues with that song.
Well, alright. Well, okay.
I don't know how we go from this into a serious discussion. I'm going to put a romantic song on.
Oh, okay.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
I'll do that. I'm going to put quite a lot of music on today. Because
right.
Both you and I are both struggling to talk a little bit, aren't we? Nat,
yeah.
I can't present a radio show with you if you're Googling.
Listen, I can do two things, multitasking.
You've proved that you can't.
Well, I've just got the lyrics for Don't Leave Me on, so that's...
Why?
I just want to see where that goes.
Why are you taking this and running? It was just a whimsical comment about Candy Girls.
I didn't know the sinister undertones
of that.
Now
you're essentially
song.
Doing To Catch a Predator on Neil Sedaka.
I'll be going straight to New York.
Come on, let's have some alone time. With Alone.
It's lovely, I like that song.
Do you know what? When I was a teenager, maybe like 11, 12, 13, something like that, I considered that the most romantic song in the entire world ever. Like,
because
I really did.
How do I get you alone?
I think that informed my adult romantic ideals.
That's not a bad thing,
song.
Is it?
I think there was that song. I think there was Eternal Flame by the Bangles, which I remember buying and thinking it was going to be a huge hit, and it really flopped.
Mm. Did it?
Yeah, really, really flopped. Oh. It didn't even like get into the top 40. And then they re-released it about a year later,
mm-hmm.
and it went to number one,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, it did. I remember it being them being on top of the pops
no,
at number one.
No, first release, it fucking crashed and burned. And what was the other one? I Can't Fight This Feeling Anymore by REO Speedwagon.
I don't know that one.
And I can't fight this feeling anymore. I've forgotten what I started fighting for. It's time to bring this ship into the shore and throw away the oars forever. That one.
I've never heard that before.
I don't know why a ship had oars, but there we are.
Tom
Armstrong has said, "My Eyes Adored You" is a bit dodgy too. Also, Young Girl.
Young Girl, get out of my...
This,
oh,
this
my
is
God.
A bad,
this, who, I don't know who sang. I don't
is
know
the
My
wrong
Eyes
day
Adored
for doing this.
My you, Eyes Adored You.
We're having, I presume, a serious interview about the R. Kelly sex cult. Alleged,
yeah.
Yeah, we've started the show twatting about, lightheartedly talking about paedophilic content.
Yeah, who is My Eyes Adored You?
Some would argue there shouldn't be any lighthearted talking about it, but what can you do?
Well, I mean, you don't have to go full
light,
do you?
Treat it serious. Yeah, but you got a bit of a laugh about it, haven't you?
Right.
John Beck, listening to Bolesworth on FUBO Radio, live from San Francisco here. That's good, isn't it?
So
no, Ian, not found that DVD yet. I know you're right, I won't come back till I do.
What DVD?
Well, you know John Beck's My Gay Stalker?
Yes.
I asked him, because I get a bit embarrassed about going to sex shops and that. There's this film that I've heard about where it's like, I think it's 20 blokes, right?
Doing what?
All essentially ganging up on one bloke, but consensually.
A guy could gangbang?
Yeah, and apparently they all go at him so much that by the end of it, you can't see any skin.
Shut.
It's a really famous porn film.
On what?
On here, you can't see any of his skin, because it's all covered in...
They've ripped his skin off?
No, they don't rip his skin off, Nat. No, no, they haven't done that. They're all, like, going over him, you know.
Masturbating over him.
Yeah, masturbating, yeah. I think that's what it's called.
Oh, I see.
A lot of men masturbate over
him. I see what you mean. So then you can't see the skin because it's covered
in
sperm, right?
Yeah,
there's
so
much. I thought you meant he had no skin left.
But I want to see. I couldn't find it online or anything.
What's it called?
I want to see this film. Invisible Man. It's called Invisible Man. so I thought, do you know what? I'll send John Beck to San Francisco, gay capital of the world.
Yeah.
Is it? I don't know if it is or not.
Well, you know,
I think
it's a nice title.
Isn't it kind of like a Brighton kind of equivalent in America? San Francisco?
Yes, it is.
I don't think that's wrong.
No,
that's
not, I don't think it's wrong. No.
So I sent John Beck to San Francisco. I paid for it.
I've
sent him over there to try and find me this DVD.
You
and this,
paid for
this
his trip.
Bloke getting jizzed all over to the point where you can't see him. And he opens his eyes at the end. It's like Rambo. It's like Rambo First Blood. You know that bit where he opens his eyes?
Yeah.
It's covered in dirt and then his eyes open. It's really brilliant bit of Rambo. But that happens at the end of Invisible Man.
I think
he just opens his eyes at the end, but then he shuts them really fast because he gets somebody's eye.
It's painful, isn't it?
Apparently so.
Stinging.
Apparently so.
Also, I feel like even with 20 men, it shouldn't cover the whole body unless they're really backed up.
Well, I don't know the making of the film now.
Right. Okay.
All I know, maybe they're all heavy shooters. I don't know.
What's a heavy shooter?
Well, someone that drops a big load.
Big load.
Yeah, yeah.
Big load of spam.
It's not uncommon in pornography, is it?
No, I don't think so.
So, yeah, that's the DVD.
Okay.
I've also asked him to try and get me its Gary Shandling show as well, but.
Just saw the documentary that Judd Apatow did about
Gary.
I really liked it. Obviously, it was long because it's Judd Apatow, but this is about 4 hours, isn't it?
Yes, 4.5, I think.
But I
loved it.
I really liked it too. I'm a big fan of, I was a big fan of Gary Shandling.
Were you though, or have you just retrospectively started saying that?
Oh no, I've watched Larry Solomon's, it's on BBC Two.
Yeah.
Loved it. I don't know why they've never repeated it.
Did you find, I don't think they got the rights to it, did you find that you, because it was HBO, Larry Sanders, mm-hmm. it was the show that made HBO.
Yeah.
Did you find after watching the documentary you wanted to watch Larry Sanders again?
Yes. Like from the beginning, all of it.
Yeah.
And it's not that easy to find.
What, Larry Sanders?
Isn't it? It's not
very
any
easy
of the,
to find.
On what?
It's a DVD box set. You'll get like 20 quid, 30
okay.
quid.
Oh, okay. I'm going to buy that then.
Yeah, it's like 8 series, I think. Yeah. 7 or 8 series. I was watching some the other night, and I oftentimes forget about it when somebody says, I'll watch your favourite programme. I just forget. It just slips my mind. But I think it is the best show ever made.
Best comedy show
ever made.
And I thought, like, I didn't know all the stuff that happened with his manager and how he sort of ended the show because of that reason. And
well, I think he was going to end it anyway. He was exhausted from all accounts. We're doing that show. Apparently it was a really difficult show to make. And I think you can see that on the screen if you actually think about it logically, how hard that must be. But in the last series, he had a legal dispute with Brad Grey, who was his manager. And they were, Shandling was suing him.
He was,
for a lot of money. It was like 100 million, I think. And I think he used that last series just basically to get out some demons, with justifiable demons as well. Anyone who's had a manager or has been involved in that sort of part of this industry knows that there's shady characters like that knocking about and knows that there are ethical implications within things. With, you know, I've had situations certainly with managers who, when you actually look at, when you take a step back, normally if you talk to someone in your real life, they will go, are you fucking mental?
But we don't know that he was shady because
Brad Grey?
He went on to form Plan B, the production company with Brad Pitt, Jennifer Aniston, had a very, very successful career. Even within the documentary,
being
Bob
successful
Saget,
doesn't mean you weren't shady.
He had Bob Saget in the documentary as well, who was saying it was really difficult for him because he was really good friends with Brad.
Caught between both.
Really good
friends
with Gary, and then Gary sort of cut him off a little bit because he was still talking to Brad.
Yeah, but you know what? I'll tell you what I found, and I knew all of what was in the documentary really already because I've been a big fan of Shandling and I've listened to a lot of interviews with him and stuff. I've also found him very inspirational, but also I've always found him kind of a I felt a degree of understanding with him as well, I think.
Yeah.
I think I said this to Mary Lynn Ricegood when she was on the show. I've always felt I'm like that. Do you know what I mean? That I'm the sort that would go, no, I feel betrayed. I'm not going to talk to you anymore.
You are that sort, yeah.
So I guess when I watch something like that, whilst I can understand people feeling aggrieved by it, I also can very much empathise with how it feels when you're in the middle of that storm and how it feels when you feel like someone isn't on the right side because you think your side is right. You will always think your side is right.
Yeah, of course.
Even if you're not. So if you feel that people that you think should be loyal to you aren't, I can understand the idea of dropping someone or you know, of not being in touch with them anymore. Even though with passage of time you might go, well, that's a bit silly or whatever. I still understood where he was at
with that moment
things.
I really liked it how he was mentored and had a lot of people over to his house and was with Peter Berg, the film director who was there, who said that he used to run scripts past him and kind of help people out. I thought that was really nice. And my favourite scene, I think, is the bit in backstage in the Comedy Club when it's Jerry Seinfeld and Chris Rock and Gary Shandling, and he's got all these bits of paper and it's very old school, and then he's watching Chris Rock on stage and he kind of gets the joke that Chris Ross is making before he says it, but then it's about divorce, isn't it?
Yeah,
he says, oh, even Nelson Mandela has got a divorce.
But and he says, that's brilliant.
It's very good, watch it.
I think it's a... Does everyone just hit a certain age and go through a journey of self, of trying to work themselves out? Because that's what I've had that for the last couple of years, definitely. And I'm a very,
what did you work out? Who are you?
I think I worked out that I didn't belong in a system. I think I worked out that I was never going to be a system player, that would never be... Weirdly, I've just been talking about this to Sue Pollard not half an hour ago.
Oh, of course, Sue else. Sue Pollard.
Bizarrely.
Really?
I've just been discussing that. So me and Sue were talking about the radio pilot that we made together.
Right.
When myself and Ed Gamble made a radio pilot and Sue was in that show. And we were discussing that show and sort of what went on with Radio 4 and how, for me, how, in my opinion, appallingly they treated that show and how it seemed very... It felt personal, even though it probably wasn't, but it felt personal at the time. So I think there's... I think that might have been the moment that I... That was like... I found out about that on the day of my 40th birthday.
that the pilot wasn't going
that
into...
Not that it wasn't going to... We didn't expect to go to series, but we had been told it will be broadcast come what may.
Right.
And they said they're not even going to broadcast it. And what Sue was saying earlier on was she was like going, it was like one of the most unbelievable experiences on a stage I've ever had.
Oh.
Like she was saying it was so successful in the room, and it was so everything landed, and I've got the recording of it. It's
can really, I listen to it
if you want to, but it's a really
like
good really good half hour radio.
Okay,
Radio 4 half hour, but anyway. Excuse me, not going into details about what they said, but I felt that day, I can vividly remember it because we were having drinks, somebody was leaving my management and we went out for drinks, and then my manager told myself and Ed that night that they weren't gonna, it wasn't picked up for a series, and also it wasn't even gonna be broadcast, and we were very upset. And I remember us walking back to the tube, and I remember thinking as we walked back to the tube, we were very, very low, both of us, and thinking, this has got to check, I can't do this anymore, I can't put it in other people's hands anymore. So I think that was the trigger moment where I thought, I can't be in the system, I can't work for the BBC, I can't have this in my life where I put my heart and soul in something. It's not about not taking rejection either, by the way. It's about going, I can't trust these people with this stuff because I don't necessarily trust that they know what's good and what's not good. Sometimes they fluke it, but I don't think they know. Or they don't think they understand when something's credible versus when something is a bit of fluff. So the best way around that is to go, right, then make it independent. So still make the stuff, which was already done with podcasts, still make that stuff, but make it independent. Don't give it to somebody else who might not treat it with the love that you've put into it yourself.
Right, but it was probably a slightly... I don't know how long ago it was that this happened, but...
So I'm 24 now, so it's in about 20 years.
Right, okay, so 50, in 20 years'
in about 16 years,
So in 20 years' time, it was a very different time to how it was when you... Now.
Yeah.
So nowadays, people tend to... You know yourself, you've done this a lot. Well, your past self did it, not your future self.
Yeah.
You just put it out yourself.
I think I follow.
I'm trying
but
to...
But I was doing that already.
Right.
So here's the thing. So Peacock and Gamble Emergency Broadcast, which was this show that we did for Radio 4.
Yeah.
Was the culmination of however many years of podcasts we'd done, plus the live shows as well. It was a mixing of those two things. So it was, we were already doing that. So here we go. So then the lesson that I learned, or the thing that I arrived at, I feel, was don't give these fuckers your ideas. That was working perfectly well on its own.
Okay.
We hadn't worked out how to monetize it, but we hadn't tried.
Yeah.
We didn't even try. I think we were so convinced, like, oh, no one will pay for this, or no one will... But I make a decent living with Periscope in terms of, like, that funds my business now.
Periscope?
Not Periscope.
Patreon.
Yeah. Patreon funds my business.
Yes.
My production company. So I don't need to give it to people.
To the man.
I don't even like to think about it like that. But I just feel if you have a lot of love for your project, if you're just doing stuff that's like, you're not, like, for example... With this show, I understand what the limitations of this show are in terms of, like, it's not my heart and soul that's being put into the show. It's just me and you having a chat every other week. So it's not like you and I turn up here with loads of fucking ideas and go, and we'll do that, and then we'll do that, and we'll do
that.
Do you know what? We just sit and shoot the shit. So that's not a... That's disposable.
Oh.
No, but that's not a bad thing.
No.
That's absolutely fine. That's disposable. It's not like, for example, the PowerPod or something, where, or the Mental Podcast, where it's a very carefully constructed product.
Yeah.
That you hope will have some longevity, or you hope will have something that it can spur in. Like, no one's going to come to me and you and say, do you want to make a film of this?
Well, I have. I turned them down.
Well, I should hope you did.
I said no.
Was it BBC?
Yeah, what's the BBC?
Yeah, no, you're right. You've got my back in there. No, but you know what I mean? You've got to work out what things are what.
Yeah.
So, I've no issue with disposable stuff, but I think when you've put your heart into something, and when you've really, you know, searched inside yourself, it sounds very wanky, like if I'm talking about ghosts, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I know what you mean.
Something that you have worked hard on to make it a standalone thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mistake to sign that away.
Right.
Is
so
what
to get
I feel.
Back to what we were saying, so we feel like Gary Shandling did that with the Larry Sanders Show by getting his agent to be a producer on the show with a big cut.
Well, he got it made however he could get it made.
Right, yeah.
Which is what happens, you know, it's like you'll hear any number of comics, for example, in the UK will say, well, I go on disposable, shitty panel shows because then people will come through the door at my tour.
Yeah, because there's a big audience for that.
I understand that logic. Mm. My counter to that is always, why the fuck would you want an audience full of people that watch panel shows? But... to do your proper stuff, because they'll just be disappointed.
Why? Because they want to see the person that's on the show rather than your own.
If you're going, do my credible, I want to get a big audience for my credible stuff. It's like, no, they'll hate it.
Yeah.
Like Harry Hill had that. It's a slightly different example, but Harry Hill had it with TV Burp. When he got a huge audience through TV Burp, utterly justifiable and a brilliant show that it was, but then they'd go to a stand-up and be like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, there's been a
Vegas
few, yeah.
had it over the monkey adverts and all that, when suddenly, to the point where he couldn't really do stand-up anymore, because it kind of destroyed the character.
Nick Helm said that when he did Uncle, they want the Nick Helm from Uncle, not the Nick Helm who does what he does on stage, which isn't the Nick Helm from Uncle. And so they come to that and like, where's the boy? And like, well,
exactly.
Here,
so, it's a poison chalice. Yeah. You know, Vegas has famously said many times, I think some of them people thought they were coming to a puppet show. Do you know what I mean?
And that's because of an advert for PG Tips.
Yeah, but that's
him and a monkey.
But you can just say, well, they're idiots. So you could also go, well, that's kind of partly your fault.
Yeah.
You know, if you dance with the devil, then that's what happens. But I'm not knocking him for doing it. He can do what he wants.
Yeah.
But I think before you make decisions like that, you have to be all right with the long-term implications of them. You have to be all right. And I came to a point where I wasn't all right with that.
Yeah.
None of this is comparing myself on a creative level to Shandling at all.
No, okay, right. Yeah.
I'm not going, I am the same as Gary Shandling. No, I couldn't fucking touch the sort of the work ethic or the talent that he had. But I understand getting to a point where you're like, fuck these people. I don't want to mix with these people anymore. I don't want to mix with people that do mix with them. I don't want any part of any of it. I'm going to sit where I am and either make stuff just for me or just that can go out independently or not make anything at all, which is kind of what Shandling did.
Yeah, yeah.
Just kind of didn't make anything at all.
No, he chose to. And then he spent a lot of time on the DVD extras for Larry Sanders, didn't he?
Yeah,
he
is an amazing. I watched that recently. It's an amazing box set, though.
I'd like to see that because his.
You can't get it in the UK.
Because, of course, his ex-fiancée is Darlene in the show, and then she did sue and got some money off them for wrongful termination when they broke up.
It was out of court settlement.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So she got some money.
Linda Doucette, her name is.
In the DVD extras, he went to such a length that they were reunited again.
Well,
for
what actually happened on the DVD extra on those? Not only the best of Larry Sanders, but also it's called something like that, similar to the Peter Cook and Dudley Moore show title. That DVD set is more about the extras than it is about the shows.
Okay.
So there's all the shows are on. There's about 20 odd best of shows, but it's more about the extras. Because they're really thorough and they're long interviews and stuff, like stuff with Tom Petty, they were long, and Shandling is being himself completely. Linda Doucette turned up with someone else. So they hadn't planned that interview at all.
Right.
She turned up with, can't remember his name, Mike something, who was having an interview, and she just turned up at Shandling's house with him. And he was like, well, we'll just do the interview.
Yeah.
And it's really uncomfortable, as is the Sharon Stone one as well, because I think something went on between him and Sharon Stone at some point. Or there certainly was some sort of, they'd been friends certainly and maybe fallen out. Whatever it was, it was very honest and it was very truthful and it was very, I know when I made the Mental podcast, I wanted to do that. I wanted that style of chat to capture that style of chat, which I don't think I did, but I was thinking about it a lot when I was making it, of just being kind of candid.
Yeah.
Candid and truthful. Which is what Shandling was about.
Well, I want to buy that DVD now.
You can't get it in the UK.
I'll import it. I got a regional player.
Have you?
Yeah.
Regionless.
Regionless player. You
know, a regional player would be awful.
Just in Kent.
What a player.
Well, in Kent, it just plays DVD.
I would imagine you'll find it online somewhere.
I will find it on eBay or somewhere, won't I?
Just torrent it.
I don't do that.
Well, he's not alive anymore, is he? It's not like he's going to be missing out on the cash.
Right. Get Google up in here, torrent that.
It's wonderful.
I love it because I think, and you're right, I always forget when people ask me, but Larry Sanders might be the best show that has ever been made.
But it's Gary Shandling's show is also amazing.
I do want to, yeah.
And it's really hard to get now.
Mm-hmm.
I told you that I had the first series, and then when I got it out to watch it, and the discs had melted.
What?
Got it out to watch it a couple of years ago.
Where were they?
I got it off the shelf, put it in the machine, it was like, can't play disc, and I got it out, it was like all white, milky on the back of it.
Oh.
It just melted. And I contacted the company that made them, and no reply. No reply from them. I'm sure I mentioned it on here.
Maybe.
All got a bit deep, didn't it?
Yeah, very deep. Let's dig deep. Let's deep.
Let's have a song about fucking flies to lighten the mood.
Sure.
song to finish.
So it's a song about banging flies.
The title of it is Flies. Undermine it and make it crass.
What's it about?
It's about a gentleman who's in love with flies.
Well, several of them.
Flies, yeah. That's why there's an S on the end.
Yep.
And he is frustrated because he can't have sex with them, because that's how he wishes to express his love, because obviously he is a human man.
Yeah.
And they are tiny little flies. It's actually a beautiful song about...
Loving flies,
yeah, yeah. So I don't know why you're giving it the big...
That's your thing?
Oh, turn it off, it's awful. It's
I didn't say that.
I'm going to wipe away a tear, actually, after that, because I think that's really quite an emotional...
Well, Paul Clark...
Heart-wrenching song.
I can't work out if it's Tom Armstrong or Paul Clark, but one of them's tweeted in, "Hi, guys, how was your Easter? Can I put a request in for Nat's CPR dick?"
When was Easter? Easter
was...
Last week. Do you do things for Easter?
No, nothing. I brought an egg in, if you want one.
No, I'm all right.
Okay.
I don't really do Easter. Easter's just Good Friday to me, so it's just Saints versus Wigan. It's the Good Friday rugby, and then the bank holiday you play Widnes.
Right.
A clean sweep though. Won all our games. Got very sad though when Saints and Wigan was on TV.
Why?
Got really down in the dumps because I couldn't get a ticket for it.
Oh, I see. Right.
And I didn't try Johnny. I didn't try Paul Wellens. I didn't, you know, none of them people.
Cause you just called them.
Yeah, but they're not. Everyone would. It sold out. Everyone would have been asking it. It should have been a pain in the arse. So I just didn't want to do it. But I was really upset at not being there, watching it on TV. And then I got cross on the game on Friday against Hull when the ground was pretty much, like, only two-thirds full.
Mm.
I was like, where's all these fucking glory hunters now? They're not there now. They all got with a Good Friday game, but they didn't come...
It's a day off work.
But it's like 8 o'clock at night, quarter to 8 at night. They could have made that if they live in St. Helens.
So your Easter was good, but sad...
It was nothing. I don't really have it as a thing. That's the only thing that's different to normal weeks.
Hope yours was good, Paul or Tom.
Yep.
What about the request?
Oh, why are you leaving out Geeky Rat?
Yeah, because I feel like that's probably their
Geeky
Twitter
Rat.
Name.
Big, who's that?
Big Bad Paul Clark, it says on the screen.
Geeky Rat.
Can I put a request in? That's not the full title of the song either. It's just CPR, not CPR Dick.
Nat's CPR Dick.
That implies that
I can give you a bit of it.
Yeah. Peddling this pussy, that's how you rock a boat.
I'll do, won't it?
Now, the I've been exchanging
pussy,
emails
the boat,
with the singer of that song.
You've been exchanging emails with them? Why?
With Cupcake.
Why have you been doing that?
She's coming on the show.
She's not coming on the show now.
Well, she might. You never know with Cupcake. She might do.
Is she UK based?
No, she's in America, but she's just released a brand new song, which I downloaded today, and her album Queen Elizabeth came out.
Why do you want her on the show?
I love her.
Okay.
I think she's great. And actually, someone tweeted me. I can't remember.
What does she think she's getting in return for coming
on
the show?
She's getting to have a nice chat with you. Nick Bowden tweeted, "I'm going to need to see." Oh, yeah, she's 20. That's why he sent me a screenshot of her tweeting. And he said, "I'm going to need CPR after finding
this out."
None of
this is a followable statement.
She tweeted saying, 6 years later and people acting like they're just figuring out I'm 20. And
who
that
said
was
that?
Shocking. Cupcake said that on her Twitter.
So she was 14 when she made the song?
No. 6 years later from whatever happened 6 years ago, not from CPR.
What?
She's 20 now. I don't know the context. Nick Bowden just tweeted me with a screenshot of that, basically saying that he can't believe that she's 20 now. It doesn't matter what she did 6 years ago. And he says, "I'm going to need CPR after finding this out." And then he
says, when did CPR come out?
God, that was only like a year ago.
Right, so she would have been 19 or whatever.
Yeah, it's all fine. I checked her out. It's all fine.
I mean, do you want to
frame
what we're talking about? Because it makes sense to people that might not know what
CPR
we're on about.
CPR is a track which a former assistant producer on the show who shall not be named. Are we still not naming him?
I mean, I'm annoyed you've referred to him as an assistant producer.
A boy who used to just turn up.
Some, like, really irritating vampire. Stalk around the studio just annoying literally fucking everyone.
He put a song on the playlist by an artist called Cupcake called CPR, which neither of us were that familiar with, we have to say.
I remain unfamiliar with it, but go on.
But, and then we were like, oh, is that actually what I'm hearing is the lyrics? We read out the lyrics.
It was filth.
It was some filth there, yeah. And then that's it.
Which is fine. I have no problem with that, but it was filth.
I mean, it's very saucy lyrics, yeah.
Yeah, it's filth. It's gutter okay. filth.
Very sexual lyrics.
Yeah, yeah.
But she's got a sense of humour and I like her.
Right. So you've been in touch with this lady, Cupcake. What's her real name?
Elizabeth.
Elizabeth.
Queen, hence the album title being Queen Elizabeth.
Let's call her Betty.
Elizabeth.
We'll call her Betty. So you've, okay. been, so you've been in touch with Betty Cupcake.
Yeah. She's not big on a lot of words and replying to emails, but she was like, yeah, I'm
probably annoyed. Probably annoyed.
No, no, she's not annoyed at all.
Is she well known? Is she famous?
She, big famous. Right. Charlie XCX has been working with her recently. Or
so
working.
What did you actually say to Betty Cupcake?
I said, I like Betty Cupcake. I said, I really like your songs.
Yeah.
Come on the show. She said, do you want me to fly to the UK? I said, no, that's okay. Just on phone.
Oh,
I
she meant like, we'd pay for it.
Well, I don't know what she meant by that. But I said, can we do it on the phone? She went, yeah, of course. She just went, yes. And then I said to her, should I give you some dates? She went, just any time. So
well,
I don't know.
Why is she not on right now?
Well, I don't have her number yet. I've just...
Well, this is all... She's just like stringing
show.
You alone.
No.
What do you mean? Any time and that's the end of it? And then...
No, she...
And then I was like, when she... You went, I don't know because I've not got a number.
No, sometimes
gonna,
that
how
happens.
How are you going to arrange, isn't
that? That happens to me sometimes when I'm out and I'm like, oh.
Yeah, okay.
Oh,
can I see you again? Yeah, give me a call. I'm not getting your number. Okay, bye.
I think, what's going on?
I think you should possibly take that as a knockback,
oh,
you know.
I did actually, though, get a number on Saturday. I don't know if I should say this.
Okay, no, well, it's too late now, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I wasn't really sure about this guy and I didn't particularly need his number. And the only reason
I didn't need his number?
Well, I didn't necessarily want it.
All right.
But...
I felt like it would have been rude.
No, nothing at all. The only reason I know what his name is because I know he put his number in my phone as what?
Oh, he did it.
What's he called himself?
Sexy John.
Sexy John, yeah.
Right. And what? Why did he give you his number then?
Because he just kept saying, well, we should go out before I go on tour. We should go out.
Before I go on tour?
He's
what is he?
The tour manager for somebody. And and I said, well, yeah, okay. I'm not saying. But then I kind of was like, well, yeah, okay, I guess. So I was like, well, I don't know because I think he's quite young. So...
how old?
I mean, I'd say he's probably
10.
He's not 10.
How old then?
What tour is this for? I don't know. He's probably like 20 or something.
Okay. So. Like Cupcake.
Yeah. She'd go out with her.
With her filth.
You'd have a lovely date with Cupcake. She's funny.
I've known.
She's a very good way with words.
Well, yeah, sure. Anytime. Bye.
So, yeah, anyway, that's
Cupcake. Well, I go, are you having a nice date with me? And she'll go, yep. And just go, just disappear. Yeah,
call
bye.
Call me later, then I don't have your phone number. Anyway, yeah, so that's that. Sexy okay. John.
Well, that's good. Are you going to go out on a date with him?
I don't think so, no.
But, you know,
with a name like that,
should we put a guest
probably
on?
A good date.
We need to speak to Ben Zan, don't we?
Let's get him in.
I'll put another song on. More Tiger Lilies. I'm going to do some Tiger Lilies today.
Mm-hmm.
That's all right?
Mm-hmm.
It's my best one.
Okay.
Makes me angry, though. Gets me charged
up.
No. It does. Oh, I get so charged.
Calm down. And so your life's been a
success. Tiger Lily's Crack of Doom. We're joined now by journalist and documentary maker Ben Zand.
Hello.
Hello, so you're right. Oh, this is badly organised, isn't it? I can't even see you.
I can't see your face. I'll scoot. Oh, no.
Doesn't matter. Let's do it as if we're all just on the phone to each other. We're talking about this. What's the name of the documentary? R. Kelly Sex Girls and Videotapes.
R. Kelly Sex Girls and Videotapes.
Apologies. I don't have my mic up. It's my fault. So I said a little bit about this. I think I saw it on the news, in fact. It was on a news website talking about this documentary. Has it been out yet? Is it actually out?
Yeah, it was out about 2 weeks ago, I think. So 2 weeks ago, Wednesday, 10 days ago, on iPlayer. And yeah, I mean, it did very well. A lot of people watched it. It's quite revelatory about the personal life of R. Kelly. He's an interesting man.
Yeah. Well, it's I try my hardest with things that I've not seen to know that much about that, to not go by like a news article. But you know, the gist of it was that it was revelatory, that there was stuff in it that was a big deal. But stuff that I think has been whispered for a while. Is that not right?
Yeah. I mean, I suppose partly it was kind of an amalgamation of many of the allegations and accusations about the man, of which they are only allegations. You know, he hasn't been convicted of anything. And then equally, there's kind of a few revelations within the film, such as we speak to a lady called Kitty Jones, who's one of his ex-girlfriends, who says that R. Kelly told her that there was a woman in his house who'd been there since she was 14 that he had trained as a sex pet.
Right.
And then one of his ex-studio managers talks about how he used to pick up girls from McDonald's when he was like in his 30s, and then someone kind of claims to confirm that he was at Aaliyah's wedding to R. Kelly, which was always one of those things that was always up in the air.
Okay, so where's the legality with that then? So where, how does that, because it's BBC, right? So how does that, again, talking to someone who isn't well informed on it at all, what legality do you have to cross with that? Because that's kind of, there has to be founded accusations, surely, I would have thought.
Yeah, I mean, well, he has gone to, you know, he went to court on trial in the early 2000s for a videotape. Essentially, all we're doing is documenting things that are within the public interest. These people are kind of making accusations on social media. Some of them have been kind of in previous
articles. Are they making them to the police as well, though?
Kind of. I mean, that's not really for me to say in terms of like whether they're going to make a criminal case. It's very different. I mean, and it's very difficult to make a criminal investigation based on the interaction between a man and a woman in the privacy of their own bedroom.
Okay.
So it's very difficult in terms of like, you know, I can't say whether there's going to be a criminal case from it because someone would have to come forward with substantial evidence. But what we're doing is we're allowing people to kind of tell their story of their interactions with R. Kelly. He's a man of which there have been many allegations. There's not just one allegation. Mm. These are numerous allegations over about 20 years. Mm. So it's not exactly unfounded. You know, in journalism, we have something called, you know, it's public interest, you know, if people are interested in it. And if it's important, he's an influential figure. So, yeah, I mean, it's very warranted to make a documentary about it. Ideally, R. Kelly would have been in the documentary because, you know, as a man who makes films, I like to make films where people get to have a say on their own lives and on what is being said about them, but he refused to be in the film. So that's his prerogative.
So what was your interest in it going in? Was it just literally as a project, as a documentary, or was it, do you have a personal interest in that? Or?
Yeah, numerous things. I mean, are many people, you know, I like R. Kelly's music. I used to be a big fan of him when I was a kid. Was definitely probably my favourite singer.
Okay.
I used to love I Believe I Can Fly. Wanted to be a love ballad singer myself. Got a fantastic singing voice.
What would be your song if you were going to sing something?
Well, I used to love Boys to Men, you know what I mean?
Oh, End of the Road?
Well, not End of the Road. Can You Stand the Rain was a fantastic
song. Did you hear the way that he shut that down then? That was the big one.
I forgot you could swear on this. I love it. I've been to Fubar Studios twice now, and both times the first thing someone said was,
"You can swear."
You can swear.
Don't have to.
I don't even like swearing.
No,
I do like swearing.
Don't seem like a swearer.
But anyway, what was the song you were going to sing at the end?
Oh, at the end, I'm not sure I'm going to sing a song.
What was the song?
I'll hold my song strong. Can You Stand the Rain?
Can we get a karaoke version of Can You Stand the Rain, please?
It's a really weird song to suggest. Actually, it wasn't a hit at all. It was just a song I liked as a kid. I was an emotional child. I had a lot of feelings. Anyway,
do you know what? But we talk about this later on, though. Yeah. I was talking about how old are you?
27.
Okay, I'm 24. But I was my favourite song, my romantic song I played earlier on was Alone by Heart. Do you know that song?
I don't know.
Okay, that and REO Speedwagon. Can't Fight This Feeling Anymore. I've sang it already on the show. And what was the other one?
Eternal Flame by the Bangles.
My mum used to have a friend called Vicky. She was very nice, nice Scouse lady, and she would always say to me, "Why do you like such depressing songs?"
Right.
I'd be like, "They're not depressing. It's about love."
Yeah, they're inspiring.
Love is a good thing.
What about Jim Steinman music?
I actually don't even know what these things are.
Meatloaf, like all battle hell.
Oh, okay, okay. I like Meatloaf. Yeah,
they would do anything. Skin those songs from a romantic point of view.
Trying to think, what else did I like?
Broke somebody else's
pen. So emotional that you broke your pen.
But to go
someone else's pen. It's not even mine.
But to go back, like, you know, I used to love R. Kelly legitimately. You know, I Believe I Can Fly was one of my favourite songs.
That was not one of his. That's not one of his best.
I Believe I Can Fly.
He's got that vibe, but you're crazy.
Yeah,
that's much more of a banger.
Won Grammy for.
Is that what
it's not all about the awards, is it?
Discuss his.
Oh yeah, his back catalogue.
Musical prowess.
And but yeah, so I was just interested in speaking to a man. I mean, just finding out about it. You know, partially to do with the Me Too campaign. You know, you had people like Harvey Weinstein and Kevin Spacey seemingly paying a price for allegations made against them. And I was intrigued as to why R. Kelly, despite the fact, you know, you could argue he's actually had more allegations, not with Harvey Weinstein, but he's had a lot of allegations, and he just kind of carries on. He's still making music. I was intrigued.
Well, that seems to be a thing in the world, doesn't it? That certain people are Teflon. There's, you know, there's sort of like, I mean, you can look to the very top, can't you, these days in terms of America, and just go, how on earth have you still got a job given what's been said or whatever? But I also have increasingly, I think, a fear maybe or a concern that allegations now are fact. I have a real... That bothers me a little bit now, that literally anyone can bring anyone down now. just by saying something, just by, and the issue with that is, like, the actual issue with that is that people who are saying, because I believe there will be a backlash to this. I think that will happen, however long it takes, that will happen, where people start going, prove it or fuck off. Like, you know,
yeah, I mean,
rather now, which is like, you've said it, ergo they lose their job. There was a very famous one in the BBC who someone just said something had happened, and from all accounts, when I read it, it was like, oh, so you've cracked onto a girl and sent her some messages stating your interest, and now you've lost your radio show. You know, and things like that really concern me, because
I agree with what you're saying. I mean, I definitely don't think that allegations should be seen as fact, and that's why in the film we repeatedly say they are allegations. But R. Kelly is slightly different to a lot of people. It's not a text message. It is, you know, a sex tape video came out that purportedly showed him having sex with
Severity of accusation is actually irrelevant, I think. I didn't mean to say that in a dismissive way like that. I think severity of accusation is actually irrelevant, because I think you have a black and white thing of do we just take things as fact. One of the issues I have, and I'm not letting this see your film at all. One of the issues I have at the moment is the Pavlovian response of I believe you. Okay, because I don't think that is correct. I think the response should be, I take you seriously. Do you know what I mean? I'm not calling you a liar. I can't believe what you said, because you can't back it up yet. But I am listening. I'm listening to what you're saying, and this is a serious accusation you're making, and it should be given due course and due process. But I think the idea of going, I believe you, to a stranger who's just said something, is a really dangerous precedent.
Yeah,
really dangerous.
I partially agree. I mean, I agree to the point in which I definitely don't think, just off the back of one allegation, somebody should lose their entire job without some kind of investigation taking place. But I would also say that there has to be an element of belief, because the whole thing is that if you want people and women to come forward who, for a long time, these women have not been believed whatsoever, then you do need to have an element of, I believe what you're saying, and I will allow you to talk, and I'll allow myself to listen. But I also agree that there needs to be an element to say, but also, you know, we have something called innocent until proven guilty.
There needs
to be evidence to back up what you're saying.
But then how can you, like, I'm asking you to help me out with this, because I struggle with even feeling this. You know, it's not, this isn't me going, fucking anyone can say anything, like, in a dismissive way. I find it troublesome that how can you have the automatic response of belief when they've presented as a claim. So it's not, you're not saying I don't believe you. This is a lie. You're saying I will listen to you.
But then think of what you're saying, because if you're talking about actual intimate kind of accusations, cases of man and a woman trying to have sex and something going wrong, or treating a woman badly, there is hardly ever any evidence, because all it will always be is someone's word against someone else's word. So it's a case of, I understand what you're saying, but in terms of evidence, it is always very difficult to get evidence, and that's why the majority of these people, they haven't been sent to jail. It's not a criminal conviction.
Yeah.
It's been a societal conviction. You know, they've lost their job, and I kind of agree with what you're saying, and I think that there should be a conversation around it, but I also think women should be believed because of the fact that for so long they haven't, and that's why so many people get away with things.
But
essentially what I'm trying to say is just that evidence is unbelievably difficult. If you think, you know, if you go into a room with somebody, something supposedly happens, there's no camera, there's nothing, no evidence whatsoever, all it will always be is my word against your word, and that will always be the difficulty.
So I guess the further difficulty to that is, and I'm not one of these people that thinks this happens a lot, but I will certainly acknowledge that it definitely must have happened at some point, is if someone's vindictive or if somebody wants to bring someone down, present climate is the right time to do it, because you can make a false allegation against someone. And I'm not saying that's what's happening here. I'm not saying that's what's happening, you know, in any of these famous situations, but it does open that up.
I mean, it does to a degree, yeah. I mean, but you kind of, I suppose, yeah, and you have to deal with it on a case-by-case basis. I mean, I pretty much would make the difference between, I suppose, you can talk about an actual criminal conviction and somebody losing their job. There is hardly anybody actually going to jail by law. So in terms of, if you're saying, why are these people being believed? Well, they're not, because no one's going to jail. But they're being believed to the extent that someone would lose their job for the fact someone's making an allegation. So there is, they are not being believed in a legal sense, because people aren't going to jail. I mean, it's not that they're not being believed, it's just that there isn't enough evidence to convict. So it is all about how society perceives it. And that is a difficult question. I mean, I just think that to a degree, yes, women do need to be believed because there are many cases of men taking advantage of the situation that they have, but also the man shouldn't always be deemed to be guilty. So I suppose you have to figure out a way in which you get to the bottom of it, and I just think in a lot of cases it's virtually impossible to do so.
And that's not happening at the moment. You know, people are...
Yeah, I mean, Harvey Weinstein is a different case. I mean, Harvey Weinstein, there's numerous women, there's a video, you know, there's videotapes.
And there's a there's a degree of confession to it as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a degree of...
I get, I mean, yeah, I mean, this idea that...
Ditto Spacey, you know, there's a degree of... I mean, they always fall short of the worst thing they're accused of, but there was always a acknowledgement of, I see why you think, which is kind of as good as a...
I mean, interestingly, the you know, with R. Kelly, he has, you know, never even remotely apologised because he, you know, doesn't see he's done anything wrong.
Right.
And I suppose all I can say is that within our film, it's not just like it's one woman saying something.
Yeah, yeah.
It is also people who have known him for about 20 years.
Some of his family you talk to as well.
Speak to his brothers. It's kind of like, it's essentially painting a picture of a man who is a reasonably controversial figure as a consequence of allegations. We don't, at the end of the film, say he is guilty or not guilty because we can't do that because we are not a court of law. All we can say is that we've shown some of the allegations, and then we say that he basically can't keep not answering it forever. There has to be a time that he speaks out about it.
Well, I mean, I guess he's not even made a denial.
No, no, he hasn't done anything.
Okay. He was asked in an interview, which you showed the clip of a while ago, of are you into teenage?
Girls,
and he asked, what age? Kind of like, at which end of the spectrum of teenagers, which I found was like an interesting response to the question.
Right.
Yeah.
But...
Well, that's legality, isn't it?
So yeah,
that
sure.
That comes into play there with legality. So it's like, you know, someone's own morals can't supersede what the law says. So it's not. You know, whether you might not approve of it, but if the law says it's legal, then tough shit. But is there not now enough evidence to go forward with this? So it'd be a...
What you would need is you'd need a lady to come forward who has some form of actual evidence of something taking place and who's willing to actually go through a criminal procedure, which could take years, could cost loads and loads of money. R. Kelly has a lot of money. It's going to be a very stressful experience. So I don't think it's that much of a surprise that women don't want to go through that procedure. Mm. And equally, in the past, a lot of the times it's been an NDA that's been signed if a allegation has partially came out, because to a lot of people, you know, money is justice, in the sense of it is much more preferable not to go through a huge legal process when you may not think you're going to win anyway. And if you're being offered $100,000 or something, I'd maybe just rather take $100,000.
Yeah, well, there's plenty of form for that, isn't there, over the years of hugely famous people who've paid people off or whatever. You know, and I also, again, whilst I would lean towards that being an admission of guilt, I also don't think you can take it as definitely an admission of guilt. Because
it's definitely not an admission of guilt.
There are people who would just go, look, just make this go away. Mm. I can't deal with it anymore.
I mean, it's definitely not... It's not an admission of guilt in any form of, like, legal sense. All it is an NDA. I mean, it's like, one's like a civil thing.
That's a non-disclosure agreement.
Yeah, one's like a civil thing, one's like... And then the other is a criminal case. And, I mean, you could argue that people sign NDAs for numerous reasons. For publicity, it's terrible for somebody to be making an accusation about you. It doesn't just mean that you've done it. It just means that you don't want people to know that there's an allegation about you. So it's definitely not an admission of guilt. But once again, it's definitely worth making a documentary when you have somebody who has the level of allegations that R. Kelly has, who has the public presence that R. Kelly has, and it's gone on for a very long time.
Would it be, if it did go legal, if it did go into a situation where proceedings were brought against him, and it then became a court case or whatever sort of case it would end up being, I don't know how these things work, would your documentary compromise that now?
No.
Would it not?
I mean, I can't really, to be honest, I can't actually speak on like the criminal case because I'm not a lawyer and I don't know how it would come about. But yeah, I mean, no. I mean, if you're talking about like kind of contempt of court, it has to be like a present.
It's got to be an active court case, right? Okay.
So, I mean, it doesn't make any difference.
So, there'd be no argument for retrospectively to go, well, that sways opinion? No, okay.
No.
I've got to say you're shaking your head because you can't see it.
No, I think having seen it, that it's quite open-ended. You present people with what they're saying, which, as you said, is already in the public domain for everyone that's in the documentary, from his brother to Kitty. It's in her book, isn't it? So there isn't anything in there, I think, that you come away thinking, making up your own opinion on it, really.
Equally, I mean, first of all, I'm not a lawyer, so I don't want to talk entirely about a court case. And it's kind of got nothing to do with me, because I wouldn't bring about a court case. I'm a journalist. I'm not someone who's been kind of involved in it, essentially. And it would be, it'd have to be with one of the women, but essentially we're not the first people to,
no,
to bring about,
well,
some
of, they
to,
have
to kind of...
Exactly.
Don't get me wrong, I'm not chucking accusations at you at all. I'm asking out of interest. It's not like...
Because it's been brought
into
the public eye again now.
No, I'm not saying, well, you fucked this all up. I'm actually asking.
Yeah, it would have to be an issue.
It would have to be that. Yeah, yeah, okay.
Well, can we talk about some of your other documentaries?
Talk about everything.
So I
watched... Don't get onto that. Don't get onto everything in the world.
The ones that I saw that were out just before the R. Kelly one were the ones about you going into a cult, into Melanation, and with the mega churches. And so some of the pastors that you kind of met who have these mega churches, they're very interesting documentaries with some of the bizarre characters that were in there. I think it's a bit about... one guy, I can remind me of his name, who had the massive carrots. And he said it was blessed by God in the village. Pastor Sanchez. What a guy.
And did you, what did you enter into the, did you join this as a thing?
Yeah, no, so this was, so I'll give you a bit of a pretext. So in Guatemala, you have some mega churches, some of the biggest churches in the entire world. You know,
are they actually called mega churches?
Yeah, they're actually called giga churches because they have over 10,000, I think, or 12,000. Okay. And you have a guy called Cash Luna, who's one of the most famous evangelical preacher in Central America.
He fell out with you, didn't he?
Yeah, he fell out with me.
Towards the end, yeah.
Sadly, but
is that a spoiler? Is that a spoiler
well,
for me now?
It's been around for a while. The documentary. It's not like it's just come out today.
Watch everything.
Wow.
But then this guy called Pastor Sanchez, and I get told about this village called Almolonga, where God has blessed it with giant carrots.
All right.
So like, they are huge, to be
and
fair.
And I was kind of skeptical, you know. And then I got there, and the carrots were legitimately massive, actually huge, like my arm. And then Pastor Sanchez came in the film, and he said anybody who watched the film would be cured of any ailment
that
they may have, like flat feet. He cites as an example of something he could cure.
And has that happened?
Cancer. I don't really know anybody who's got flat
feet. I felt great since I watched it, so it's been fine.
What even is flat feet? I think it's a really weird...
When you've got no arch to your feet. Yeah.
Out of all the things you'd want to be cured of, I'm sure that
is... It's kind of debilitating.
Oh, is it really?
An ex-girlfriend of mine had it, and it was kind of... She walks like ridiculously because
I apologize.
Of flat feet. No, it's not.
I didn't mean to talk badly
about
flat feet.
I'm not protecting her feelings at all. I'm just saying it's a thing.
But yeah, and then essentially we, you know, find out that, you know, in all likelihood the carrots probably didn't come from God. He basically takes me on stage. He gives me like a massive bag of giant carrots, and it's really nice. You know, everyone in the town was really happy. He interviewed me for ages, and then we find out that it's probably because the land is quite fertile, but equally they use a lot of fertilizers, pesticides, overuse them. Potentially.
Oh, so they're actively making big carrots.
Yeah, and it could have health effects essentially. So, but yeah, I mean, I like to make films first of all that people don't necessarily know about, because what's the point of making films everyone does know about? Mm.
And
then secondly, just with interesting people, because
it's
very enjoyable.
I think you're quite brave, might be the right word, because in another documentary where we talk about miscarriages, do you want to say what that one's about?
Yeah, so in El Salvador, women, you know, claim that they are routinely jailed for having abortion. I mean, for miscarriages,
which I didn't know, and I was shocked about.
They're
that
jailed
one.
For having a miscarriage,
yes,
as if it's intentional.
Yeah,
as
well,
if it's an abortion.
They get convicted of like aggravated homicide
for How long was her sent?
30 years.
30 years. It's just incredible. I didn't know about this at all.
Because El Salvador has like the harshest abortion laws in the world.
Yeah.
And then miscarriage somehow gets kind of.
So is the implication that they're having abortions and trying to pass them off as miscarriages?
Yeah. Well, for example, they'll claim that they didn't go to the doctor during their pregnancy, so they've actively chosen not to take care of their body, so therefore they've killed their own child. That's why it came out, and it was not alive when it came out.
Isn't that terrifying that's actually happening in the
world
now?
And one of the politicians that you spoke to said that 30 years wasn't long enough, it should be longer. But one of the
I
guys...
I assume that was a man.
Of course.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Well, not of course, there are women that believe that kind of thing as well.
No, but it's generally speaking as men about abortion laws, isn't it?
But one of the gang members that you spoke to, and I thought, my God, I couldn't believe you asked the question, when you asked him about how many murdered people, and he was descriptively saying how he'd done this or that, and then I think, what was the question you asked him? Well, are you a bit of a, did you say...
I called him a psychopath.
Psychopath, that was it.
Well, I said you sound like a psychopath. From a psychological perspective, you did actually sound like a psychopath.
Yeah, but I just felt like, as you were saying that in your head, were you thinking, well...
He weirdly didn't get annoyed about that question. He got annoyed when I challenged his manhood, because I said to him, you know, you think you're macho, but surely killing women makes you the least manly man in the world. And then he got really annoyed.
Didn't
about
like
it.
That one. No.
Here's an interesting thing. How are you? I'm going to slightly relate it back to myself, because it's something I've experienced recently. I'm making a film at the moment, and I've experienced it recently. Do you have, going from that you just reported about that when you have a camera with you, do you feel like a very different person?
Yeah.
Isn't that really alarming?
Yeah, it's cool though. I like it.
I find it really alarming. I find
Why?
It really unsettling. I do, honestly. In some of the stuff with the Parapod movie and some of the situations we were in.
Right.
Like, there was one where we were out somewhere remote in the middle of the night, and we were just brazenly there, and it was only the next day we thought, we could have just been stabbed there.
Cameras that, like, definitely course, take right. you to, you know...
Yeah, the camera didn't make us safe, but it feels like it does.
I wouldn't necessarily say makes you safe. I mean, yeah, it definitely makes you feel slightly... I don't think it makes you feel safer. It just makes me... about 100 times more confident.
Yeah.
I have like an ability to talk to everybody. I feel like I'm a reasonably introverted person in normal life.
Okay.
And then on camera, because I just know that I have to, and you know, it's just my job. I just feel like I'm just suddenly like, oh my god, let's talk to anybody. And also, I'd never want to like do an interview and not ask a difficult question, because you just come across looking really bad, and it's just like, what's the point in talking to somebody if you're not going to actually challenge them? And a camera definitely like kind of makes you do it. Obviously, if I was normally talking to an El Salvadorian gang member, I wouldn't be like, you're a psycho.
I think the camera saved you. Do you think it's
honestly, I've genuinely been thinking about this quite a lot recently because of my experiences with it, do you think it's partly because you're like, well, they're less likely to do anything because there will be evidence. So they're less likely to kick off, even though it won't definitely rule it out, but it's less likely because they'll be aware that they're being filmed. So it's not like just in a bar where they could just
knock you out and go. I suppose, but also it doesn't really always work like that. Like, I mean, I've filmed in like Africa and the Middle East a lot, and it really does not make a difference, because if they robbed the camera, then there wouldn't be any evidence.
It's not like
it's like live streaming it. I mean, I suppose I also just have...
I've never thought of that.
Yeah, that's true.
Just took the camera away.
But also I just have confidence in my own ability on camera to not say things in a way where I think somebody's going to want to kill me.
Okay.
You know, it's kind of like, I'm not like massively aggressive. I'll just always be like, you know, it's kind of like, do you think you might be a psychopath, as opposed to you are a psychopath. You know, it's kind of it's all about tone as well. It's not just about what you say.
Yeah.
So I never actually think I'm going to die. I mean, the next series I'm doing is about the world's most dangerous cities.
Okay.
And that will be quite scary.
Can you?
Who's that for?
It's BBC again.
It's dead interesting meeting you, mum.
Yeah,
and where did you get your energy to do it? Like, where is it?
Because I just find life boring. Otherwise, I have serious problems with boredom.
But do you also have an overall ethos? Or do you also have something that you're trying to achieve with this?
I genuinely
love. Obviously, the self-serving thing of, again, not an insult, but the thing of like pushing yourself forward as well and being known for that.
I honestly love. I mean, partially, I'm from Knowsley in Liverpool, which is the kind of probably like least diverse, one of the most poverty-stricken places in the UK. And I suppose, you know, I just realised that a lot of people didn't really know much about the world. I remember someone once thought that Enrique Iglesias was from Pakistan and they hated him as a consequence. So I've just always been intrigued in showing people different parts of the world. And equally, I like the idea that people who are really powerful can't just get away with things just because they're powerful. And like, journalism allows you to challenge people on the things that they think they are.
Do you get people now, though, coming up to you with, you should make a documentary about this, and suggesting stuff to you all the time?
Yeah,
you like
really
that?
Cool. Yeah, definitely. Would you then do them, or would you go...
It
depends.
No,
if some of them are really shit. Some of them are really shit ideas.
It's awful, isn't it, when you get people who are fans who give you really shit ideas and you have to go, oh, that's a good idea.
It's a shame. I mean, but some people just don't really understand. Obviously, you know, if you don't work in TV, you don't know what makes a good TV film. But some people have suggested ideas and they've been awesome. So
you've taken them, made those.
Any more people, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, I literally had a series called BBC Pop-Up where the whole point was that people sent me ideas and I made the things. So I love people doing it. It's awesome.
Okay. It's been a pleasure speaking to you, man.
It's been fantastic talking to you guys. Thank you so much.
You know, the present and future projects as well.
Thank you so much.
Ben Zan, thanks a lot, man.
Thanks. Goodbye.
We're going to play Auntie Mabel. I mean, I'm going to let you off your singing.
Yes.
But you can come back and do it. I'll tell you another day. That was the Tiger Lilies with Crocodile, and before that we had the Tiger Lilies. What did I put on before that? I can't remember.
Tiger Lilies, something else.
No, don't be dismissive.
I don't know because I went to the toilet, didn't I? I don't know what the toilet was.
It was Auntie Mabel.
Right.
Auntie Mabel, of course, with the big reveal. We're joined now in the studio by Sarah Milton.
That is correct.
Oh, yeah, that was quite rude, wasn't it? Do you know what it was? Do you know what happened? I looked up here for your name and it wasn't there. And then I scanned down, but your name on the, it's on the press release. But on the press release, your name goes over two sentences. So it's Sarah there and Milton there. So I had to go, Sarah. So this is what I did. Right. This is what I did. I went, Sarah Milton. That's what I did. Thank you for coming. I appreciate it. So we're going to talk about Tumble Tuck.
Yes.
Which is, it's at the King's Head Theatre, and it's part of, is it a festival that it's a part of?
Yeah, so King's Head are doing an all-female playwright festival in response to the lack of representation of female voices on stage.
Yeah, yeah.
So Fiona English and and their team came to watch the show in Edinburgh. So we've actually already done the show, we did it for a month at the Fringe, which was sick, it was so good.
It's sick good, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, sick is a good thing.
Yeah, sick is good. Sorry, yeah, that's a good word.
Because I would say it's like kind of a 19-year-old kind of chat, and I'm 24. I'm 24 now.
24, nearly almost 25.
I struggle a little bit with I'm nearly 25. Yeah, so I struggle a little bit with like the young people speak, but I try and catch up with it.
I got ID'd yesterday, so I think I'm still massively getting away with it.
To get what though? For what?
Alcohol. Oh, I'm 26.
Do you know what? The ID now for energy drinks. Did you know that?
Yeah, which I think is a good thing.
What age are you allowed to buy?
16.
Okay.
Yeah. But you know, you do get a lot of black school kids buying shed loads of Red Bull.
Yeah.
But then I also don't blame them because, you know, exams are stressful.
But where does that stop, though? Where does that, like, will they start IDing for chocolate and stuff? Because it's like, it's just bad for you.
Yeah, I guess it depends on.
Like, you can't get pissed on Red Bull, can you?
No, but if you have too much of it, it can send you a bit.
Yeah, but that's true of coffee, too. So do we ID for coffee?
Yeah, true.
Oh, well, gone mad, mate.
Gone
we
mad.
Are getting deep.
Well, gone mad. Deep, but we'll still promote your play. So go on, so you did it at the Fringe.
Yeah, we did it at the Fringe for a month. It went down really well. The King's Head came and watched it. They loved the show and they asked if we'd headline their all female festival again to do it in April.
Is it single-hander?
Yeah.
So it's just you and it, okay.
It's just me. Okay. The play was like...
So you're only increasing female performers by one.
Hey!
You could have had other people in it. Imagine if you'd done that. Imagine if you'd done a thing where you could have more swimmers in it as well. Then you would have been making a real difference.
Okay, well, when they properly start funding a Fringe theatre,
I don't know,
and we can afford more actors, I am super stoked to do that.
I just think if your heart's in it, I just think it'd be really sick to have to have like loads of swimmers in it.
I mean, obviously, but
is it about swimming? Is it genuinely about swimming?
Well, it's about yes. So for this play in its context is essentially about a young woman who is struggling with her mental health and she is finding solace in swimming.
Okay.
But hopefully people who come and watch it will find that's applicable to every kind of sport. And
it's Daisy,
the character is called Daisy, and she is trying to translate the solace and calmness she feels in the repetition of swimming and the experience she has in the water in her everyday life.
Okay.
So, which is something that that happened to me. Like I
happened
was...
to me as well. Same.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same. Yeah. I hate that I don't swim at the moment. I went through a thing last year swimming every day for a long time, and then I stopped because we were shooting the movie, and I couldn't go to the spa every day, and just didn't get back to doing it again.
Mm. Yeah.
And it's really bothered me.
Like, yeah.
It's really bothered me.
There's something so. There's something so soothing about literally just going back and forth.
Yeah, yeah.
Nothing else but you in the water. I was diagnosed with a panic disorder in 2009. Okay. I consider myself much better now, but anxiety is a massive, massive thing.
Okay.
Particularly for young people, but of course it's across the board. But the thing that really started helping me was just swimming, getting in the pool, having half an hour a day just to calm the down.
See, but I also though with swimming, I'll just be brutally honest with you. The reason I'm not going back at the moment is because I now feel too self-conscious about myself. I've never given a shit about my size, but now because I've literally spent the last 3 or 4 months sat at a computer editing this film and just sort of like just not moving and just fucking blobbed out completely. And I now feel like I can't even though the place that I go to rarely had anyone else there anyway. But sometimes there were people there. I now feel too self-conscious. I think it would actually be more of an anxiety for me now to go there now because I'd have to get over that.
Daisy talks about this in the play.
Okay.
And this is definitely a trigger point for me starting to write it. Because when I was swimming, I'd moved back home from London I was very unwell, had no money, was working 50
hours. Back to where was this?
I moved back to Pulborough, which is this tiny village in West Sussex. Okay. So I moved back in with my mum. That's when you've spent 4 years away from home, that's stressful enough in itself. Yeah. Because you're reverting back to living with a parent.
Yeah.
Total dynamic change in my life. Had no money. I'd been working 50 hours a week in London. It was bloody awful. Anyway, came back home, started going swimming. And at this point, I was going up once a month to the Soho Theatre as part of their writers group. Because mm-hmm. I was exploring what writing could be for me after I'd come out of drama school. So
which one, please?
I went to Mountview Academy.
Okay, but a lot of them.
Yeah, it's good. It was. Yeah. It's an amazing school. They're moving their campus to Peckham.
Okay,
but I trained in Wood Green. It's an amazing school. Really, really great. I had a great time. So there was a period of time for me. At this point, I was 2 stone heavier than I am now.
Okay,
and because I put that down to anxiety and taking it out on food.
Yeah.
And there was a day where there was a local team that came in and they had a line reserved for them and they were practicing. And at this point, I thought I got pretty good. I thought,
I
was holding a pretty good time for me.
Yeah,
and
competing
with myself, I was doing all right.
Yeah.
And then I'm swimming next to this. They could have been triathletes.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing on them. They're pure muscle. Like, they are at it in the pool. It is hardcore. And I'm there doing what I think is a pretty good breaststroke. Mm. And I'm like, oh.
Don't need it, do you?
I'm going to get in the shower and I'm going to go home and I'm going to eat another chocolate bar.
And did you do that? So was that your response to it?
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
I felt so uncomfortable and I got out, decided that, I'm shit swimming, so I'm not going to go
really?
There.
Oh, so really? Isn't that heartbreaking?
I spent about 3 or 4 days going, what's the point? Like, I've been going for 6 months now and I'm crap.
Yeah.
And then I wrote about 5-10 minutes into the show, there's this section where Daisy describes a swim, and that's the first thing I wrote. And after I wrote that, I was like, I need to get back in the water.
Yeah.
Sod them. It feels so good. I'm going to get back in the water. And I just start going back.
I swear I spoke about this on this show when it happened. I'm sure I did. I remember speaking to you about it. Do you remember when I first started swimming there? And I had a blank on the word. What's the fucking word?
What are you trying to say? You got your...
Well, there's only one word for it. When you're not getting out of breath and stuff, when you're getting... You're fitter, you're...
Yeah.
Fucking hell, what's the word I'm looking for? It's a really obvious word.
Fitter...
When you're not out of breath... Stamina!
Stamina!
Yeah. Stamina. So, I think I've had a stroke. So my stamina was up and I was like sort of feeling comfortable. I was like, okay, I'm not even out of breath now. I can do like 50 lengths and I'm still all right. I'm still steady with it. And, I can feel slightly out of breath, but that's a good thing or whatever. And I definitely spoke about this on this show. When the guy was in the water, like, it's a really small pool that I go to anyway. And this other guy was there. And he was breaststroke, but his head was always above the water. Mine's not when I did breaststroke. I go under and then up and under and up.
Yeah.
And his head was always above. So I was sort of being aware of that. I'm trying to do it. I was like, God, I can't even do that. That's too much for me. And I was like, I'm going to go back to how I normally do it. And then he started putting some speed on.
Mm.
And I genuinely in my head was like, he must not beat me.
He's got no clue he's in a race.
Right. If he was, he probably could have just fucking thrashed the water to foam. But I did, and it was really pushing me as well. I was like, keeping up with him was like really pushing me.
Yeah.
I was having a race with this fucking stranger.
With a man that doesn't even know he's in a race.
Yes. I used to get, I always used to start in the slow lane, and the first day I moved into the intermediate speed lane was like,
Yeah.
fucking did it.
Yeah.
It was like a
and Team
a moment
GB turned up and ruined it for you completely. Yeah,
they really did. Those triathletes really did. But no, but then you have that realization. And I definitely, this writing this play was incredibly therapeutic for me. It's not autobiographical, but in terms of the emotional journey, it definitely is, and that relationship with coming to terms with A, my mental health, and B, myself and my body in general and what it's capable of doing. This play is definitely that. And I think, when we were in Edinburgh, we had so many mothers bringing their daughters, and that was really wonderful for me, seeing that happen in audiences. I will always remember this one show where I had a mother and her 2 daughters. One was quite young. We recommend 14 plus because there's some naughty language in it. But
what words do you do?
Oh, I say the naughty C word.
Do you say it really? Do you want to say it now?
Cunt.
That sounds so nice, though.
I said it the other day. Do you remember when I said it last
week? You said it a lot, and you didn't say it in the nice way.
It's because I've got this fan, right, called Connor.
No,
Connor Wallace, right? And years ago, when I had a real mental health, not even a blip, a fucking complete breakdown, he was very young, and he wrote me a long letter that I actually will still cite as being something that was hugely important to me. It was a handwritten letter, like 4 or 5 sides, and it felt hugely important to me as somebody that was valuing me and saying how much I meant to them and all this sort of thing. So, lovely lad, historically, but then I let him come on this show doing a bit of singing every now and again, and he's like, he's proper gay as well. So he does proper
which
gay.
Is fine.
Most of the time it is, but with Connor it's just a bit much. You know what I mean? And he was
it's
like,
a bit much for you.
No, just, I think for anyone, you know, it's all Tina Turner shit and all that. And he does lots of noises and that. It just he overgays it. But anyway, point is he got a bit cocky with this, and he got a bit sort of like arrogant with this. And
well, he'd start saying, "I can't do tonight, or I can't do this time. Can
I
we
can't
do this?
Sing on this day because of this." And I'm like, "I'm giving you a fucking opportunity." And he's like, "Oh no, I can't do that. Oh, no, I'm too important now for you." Which was the what he was giving off. He wasn't actually saying that.
He was saying, like, I've got uni off. Or I've got to go to work. Something like, you know, not very important, like
and
that
I,
kind of thing.
And I'll be honest with you, Sarah. The last time I was here, I just snapped on her.
You did have a.
It's unforgivable.
Rage
I snapped
about
on
him.
Her and I just said he's being a little cunt now.
He said it quite a few times, didn't he?
Yeah, I kept calling him a cunt.
And he wrote.
And is that why they made the radio station uncensored?
Yeah, they
since that was the trigger. Yeah, after that.
They wanted to keep me, so they went, well, let's just change what it is.
He wrote a nice. I mean, he did write. Well, I say a nice letter. He wrote a letter to. Again,
over gay.
But it wasn't kind of, you weren't really having it, were you? Well, we'll see how it goes later if we have him on again. And I think he might be still banned. Is he banned still?
Well, I offered him a lifeline. I said he was banned, and then I offered him a lifeline because I thought he was actually behaving all right. And then he just started being a cunt on the phone again, didn't he? He started giving
I don't know if he was that. He did apologise. He said, look, I know about my behaviour. Please give me another chance. I feel like
if I've learned anything from Twitter these days, we do not accept apologies anymore. Apologies mean nothing. You say, I reject your apology. I don't care if you're sorry. I don't know what people want, but we do that.
That's very much
so. Anyway, back
Twitter
to the C word. So, you're a C word in your show.
Isn't that true, though? You're like on Twitter and things like that.
What?
Yeah,
isn't that true on Twitter? Have you not noticed that?
What? Well, people will issue a formal apology, and someone somewhere
just
will quote tweet it and say,
take a part of it.
This apology is bullshit.
Yeah, which may be the case sometimes.
And then that gets a couple of retweets because, you know, it's the opposing thing to do.
I hate the world.
But yeah, I do say the naughty C word in the play.
Okay.
That's fair enough. You say it nicely, though, I have to say, when you said it, I wouldn't be. Even if you called me the one, I'd like it.
Daisy's accent is, not that Essex is a bad accent, my boyfriend is from Essex, but Daisy's accent is Essex.
That was like, you were going to say it's a bad accent, and then you remembered your boyfriend was from Essex, and went, oh, it's fine, because boyfriend is from Essex. So what do you want to do? How long is it, by the way?
It's 55 minutes.
Okay.
Like I was, what I was saying earlier was, you know, mothers who bring their daughters, a lot of the dialogue that Daisy has with her mum in this show is direct copy from conversations I've had with my mum. Like, you know, there was a point where my mum actually came swimming with me once and called me a breaching whale. Like, stopped halfway in the pool, watched me do a tumble at the end. Pissed herself laughing because as my arse came out of the water, she thought it looked like when a whale breaches. And, you know, I held that. I held that sort of, like, horror.
But was she a
she
bit,
thought
was
she was being absolutely hysterical.
Yeah.
As a young woman who was severely anxious at this point, that's just stayed with me for so long.
Yeah.
And I think that's what, you know, that's what anxiety does.
And is she now mortified about that? About the idea that she'd put
it
on
great.
You?
No, she thinks it's great. She's in a play.
No. What I mean is she now mortified at the idea that she said something that did actually go in? Meant to be as a joke or whatever.
The thing is, like, I think, you know, my mum is an incredible woman. She raised me and my brother by herself, pretty much.
Okay.
And we have amazing conversations about feminism and mental health and she recognises that. I think for her it's we've had a conversation about oversensitivity, and I was like, at that period of my life and being incredibly anxious, there of course is oversensitivity because my brain is working in an overactive, oversensitive way. So what she was saying it as a joke, but that's sort of what the journey is about, is Daisy receiving this information and things that have been said to her and holding that weight in her, and then just dealing with it, because that's what you have to do.
Yeah, yeah.
That is essentially what we have to do. We can't, you know, there will always be jokes between mothers and daughters that are slightly offensive, and particularly with teenagers when things are taken and held on to. But
yeah,
my mum hasn't hurt me, and you know, there was never that intention.
Well, it's
there.
A difficult line, isn't it? Particularly if someone has a diagnosed issue or something that clearly is some sort of issue, and you don't know what it is yet. But there's a difficult line, I think, in completely altering your behaviour around a certain person because of they have X, Y, and Z, or whether you go, right, well, what needs to happen is it needs to be a case where you understand that if I say something like that, it isn't as personal as you feel that it is, and so it's which is the best way of being.
Yeah.
Do you just go, right, shut that part of me down because that person can't take that, or do you go, no, they'll need to meet me halfway here and sort of, I mean, it sounds awful saying like toughen up, because it's not toughen up, it's not that, but it's to what level do we pamper, I think is my question. You know,
I think it's some awareness. Like when you are struggling mentally, it is really difficult to be aware that you are. And for me, I started getting better the minute I accepted that I had a panic disorder and I was anxious. The minute I started saying to myself, I am anxious, I am having a panic attack, I'm feeling unwell, that is the moment where you start to be able to accept the world around you again as well.
I guess you would have coping strategies within that, but why is knowing it's a thing part of what makes it better? Because surely the thing then still exists as a thing. Do you know what I mean?
It exists, but you're taking back control.
So that would involve you.
Anxiety and mental health completely take away your control. They completely take away your control of being able to exist in a world. And the minute you start accepting and having that full awareness of this is what I have, this is what I deal with, you are not in control of me, anxiety.
Right.
I am now in control of you.
See,
I am breathing.
I'd argue some of that. I think that but then it's all personal experience.
Totally,
so when I say argue, I don't mean you're wrong, because you're obviously right about what you're talking about for yourself. I think control doesn't necessarily go away. I can't speak for anxiety, but with other mental health things, I think control doesn't necessarily go away. I think you experience, as in one experiences, a bizarre perversion of let's think of the best way of wording this, because if I word it wrong, it's very wrong. A bizarre perversion of how you express things and how and what's important to you. You know, so I think you sometimes, in a bad situation, will surrender any care about hurting other people, any care about other people's feelings, because you're like, do you know what, fuck it, or do you know what, fuck them, or any feelings of
what's the point?
Yeah, but certainly, you know, things like loyalty and things like that would all come into play as well. You would be like, well, I no longer care about this person, or I no longer care about this situation. I don't care about it enough to even play the game anymore. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's bizarrely quite a liberating feeling when you're in it, but it's a fucking knife edge. Like, it really is a knife edge, because you can do some serious damage there.
Of course, yeah.
But I think that's something, I think that is probably quite a positive for most people in their life, to actually, again, not put up with shit. Do you know what I mean? And we all, I think, put up with a degree of shit in our lives for a peaceful life, or to keep things sweet, or to keep people from getting angry with us or anything like that.
Yeah.
And I think there's one of the blessings of mental health for me is the ability to push it a little bit further sometimes and go, well, you know that I'm ill, so of course, but yeah, I'm aware I called a bus driver a cunt, yes, but in fairness, he was being one. And I just had the ability to fucking tell him on that day. Do you know what I mean? Stuff like that. That's not even a specific incident, but stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of interesting. I think it's a real, I think the whole mental health stuff, that's why I enjoy stuff about mental health, and I get tired of stuff about mental health too, and I get concerns about it being utilized as a trend and all those sort of things, and those accusations can be made of me as well.
I get concerned about it being glamorized.
It's really concerning that.
Yeah,
I
was told a story the other day from a friend. Her partner teaches in a school, and they, within an hour in this school, they had 9 female students claim to have had a panic attack, and that's 9 teenage girls. And you have to treat all of those teenage women with the same respect and the same, you know, treatment. But that's an incredibly high amount for 1 hour for one school. And you're like...
Oh,
and
so they all had a panic attack in that hour as
yes,
well?
Yes, oh, right, okay. In different classes, etc. Okay. So, but, you know, obviously you have to believe them.
Yeah.
They're telling you they're feeling unwell and they're telling you that they are incredibly anxious. You have to believe them. But, you know, what is that? Is that a fault of social media and press glamorizing mental health, or and them thinking it's something to be a part of, or are we looking at, you know,
an epidemic
that has again been caused by the same stimuli? Yeah. Like it's a total, you know, it's really difficult to gauge what's happening.
It really is.
Whether it is learned behavior now, or whether it is now a cool thing, or if like we are in a world that is not coping.
Well, I presume there must be a level of... So my experience of talking about mental health stuff and doing mental health projects or whatever and things that involve that and speaking openly about myself and situations that I've been in my life, my experience of that is that people correspond with me far too much, but it's fine. But do you know what I mean? I get a lot of fucking emails and stuff about it. And they will thank you for giving them the courage or whatever to be open about it and all that sort of stuff. And you think, okay, so is that just there for that many people?
Mm.
And you have inspired... Okay, I'm not even buttering myself up, but you know what I mean? You have shown that it's actually safe to do that, really, 9 times out of 10? Or are they going, oh, I'm a fan of him or her... They're cool. I like their stuff. Like, sort of similar to wearing a band t-shirt, really. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of like going, oh, he is mental. So I will be one of the mental ones as well. That's the really...
Mm.
Something that has really concerned me in pushing forward in mental health projects is I don't want anyone to think it's on trend. Yeah. If it isn't for them in their life, they can understand it and they will know someone that it's... But I don't want them to...
I mean, I'm thrilled that, you know, World Mental Health Day trends on Twitter. I think that's awesome. I think it's absolutely amazing that we're all talking about it, and reducing stigma, of course, like, absolutely paramount. But you're right. Like, what is on our hands right now? Like, what's happening? So, yeah. But Tumble Tuck is a play
about that
journey that are similar to what I experienced emotionally and not autobiographically in narrative, but definitely in emotional journey.
Yeah, well,
hopefully a lot of people will relate to that, and particularly young people will take a step back, and there's so much pressure on young people to be defined as successful human beings. And what does that mean now? Is that having, you know, over 5,000 followers on Instagram, or is that 100 A stars or whatever? Like,
well, it appears to me, from what I can see from the outside, and I'm very much outside it, but what I can see from the outside is it does appear to be the badge of honor these days is however many followers you've got, however many YouTube hits you have, and all that sort of thing. And again, as meaningless as an A star to me, like I said, it's sort of like I would still go, well, fucking passing your exams isn't... Don't worry about that either.
Yeah,
that's also meaningless. That's equally meaningless. You know, do you know what I mean? It's just like you learn what you learn as you go along. You don't have to be able to do algebra or shit. You know, you can just learn about the world. Coping with the world is the main thing you will have to do in your life. So it doesn't matter if you can add up.
No, but it doesn't mean don't try, does it? Well, to pass them.
It doesn't mean don't try, but what it does mean is the night before your exam, don't feel like you could slit your own wrists, because it's so much pressure has been put on you to get a fucking grade.
Essentially, be the best on your own scale, which is the experience you and I both have had in the swimming pool.
Yeah, yeah.
You're making competitions.
You keep talking. I wonder if I've got Heal the World on here. I think I could like really nicely blend into it. No, you totally are, and it was. That was... I definitely spoke about that on this show because it really alarmed me. It alarmed me that I entered into that, because I'm kind of... I will have a front of being cocksure. I have a very sensitive side as well, which I'm also very open about. But I was alarmed that I entered into that night. I was alarmed that felt important to me. I'm alarmed now that it feels important to me that I don't really feel like I want to take my shirt off in public. That alarms me, because that's not... Yeah. That isn't who I am at all. It's never been who I am at all. So it's weird that it now has become a thing, and I don't know why it's become a thing.
I spend the whole show in a Speedo swimming costume.
Right, okay.
And it's really important for me that I do that, because I want my arms to wobble. I want my legs to jiggle. And I want that to be a visual representation of a 5'10" woman that wobbles.
Yeah.
I want her to be
for
on
what,
stage.
For what reason, though?
So, again, as a visual representation for young women and men to see that, because we are plastered with...
Airbrush.
Airbrush. And Instagram filters, and that idea that, you know, we're all bloody perfect, and we're definitely not. When I cross my legs, the upper leg will dimple. I get dimples all the way down my thighs.
Okay.
And my arms will move when I wave. Mm. And there was a period of time as a teenager where I refused to wave. I would hold my upper arm against my body and I would wave like Windy Miller.
Right.
Yeah. This is what I would do. And for me, it was really important that, you know, if we're doing a play about swimming, I stand there as a swimmer and I am, but you can see those parts of my body, and I do turn around and you will see my bum wobble. And it is essential for me that we are talking about that sort of representation.
No, totally. But I think I should clarify at this point that the reason I'm self-conscious is because I think I'm overly muscly.
I think
it's not a fat thing. This, I actually feel like
too muscly.
I feel too defined.
Yeah, so, you don't want to make other people feel bad.
It's that. Yeah. So I think I understand what you're saying, but I think we differ in that respect. Is that my feeling is I think that people will be like, oh, I don't want to get in the pool now because look at that dude. Look how sick he is. look how sick all his muscles are. They will say
sick muscles he's got.
Yeah,
there.
So maybe I should get some sort of. I'm just desperately trying to put weight on at the moment.
Yeah,
just to sort of like. Make people around me feel better, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I mean, if anything, you're doing
but I'm sorry
really
about
good
your
there.
Wobbly arms, but I can't relate.
It just felt like the right thing to do.
There was a moment where I
was really, really, really fucking scared about doing it, and I said to Tom, our director, I asked if I could wear a swimsuit that had shorts. Because I was scared about my intimate parts being on show. I was scared about pubic hair.
Yeah.
And he said, well, is that the character is... Well, I don't think that's what she would wear. And I went, no, but it's what Sarah, it's what Sarah would want to wear.
Hard, though, that's hard, though, as an actor. You know, that's
totally,
a tough
but
call,
he was totally right. He was like, that is... You know, Daisy is not going to... As this 20-year-old young woman... Like, she is not going out to buy shorts. She'll just go to her local pool in a normal speedo.
Yeah. Like, and again, well, not to be suspicious, though, but did you just, like, kind of surreptitiously try and sell your show with the promise of pubes?
I
feel like you just went, oh, I was worried that you might see pubes, but then the director said, oh, well, that's what she would wear. So there is a chance if you come to the King's Head Theatre.
I would like to say that I'm pretty proud of my pubic hair management.
Between the 24th of April and the 12th of May.
I can make
no
promises either way.
You might see a pube live. Hey, well, look, best of luck with it.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited.
24th of April to the 12th of May. Press night's the 25th of April. Why did they do that? Why did you make press night the night after you open?
Actually, there was a conversation about it being the Friday night.
Okay.
But then, who wants to come on their Friday night? You know.
Right.
True. That's true.
But also, like, you know, press comes in early. They're obviously going to like love it.
And I presume you've got press already from Edinburgh.
Yeah, we've got really good press from Edinburgh.
Don't matter.
We had some.
I cancelled the press night. Tell them they can't come. I'll say they can come, but they have to pay.
Okay, Helena, you're going to save so much on wine. That's my producer.
I feel like that's the way forward. It's been a pleasure chatting with you. I'll tell you what I've done.
What?
I've absolutely
booked
fucked up the timings.
Because now you're at a point where you can't put a song on now, can you?
I'm at a terrible point here, because I'm at 54.
Yeah.
Well, 55 now.
You got 5 minutes on
that? I've got 5 minutes left of the song, of the show. Yeah. I've not got 5 minutes on because I have to bring in the Star Wars music.
Oh, okay.
At 57. So
well,
I've
no,
got
the actual Star Wars music is a long song, so you could actually start
I could just
bringing
put that
it in
on
now.
Finish early.
You could do that now. Yeah,
let's do that then.
Cool. Beers?
We'll do that.
What a plan?
Thank you to Ben Zan for coming in. Thank you, Sarah, for coming in.
Cheers.
A pleasure.
Thanks so much.
Coming up next is the hip hop show. You've got time to go make a cup of tea actually, because this is a slightly longer sort of handover.
It's fine. Someone tweeted us the other week. Can't we keep the whole song in of this? And I'd argue that I was like the speech is better than the song.
We can't.
Whoever that person
it's,
is,
it's 7 minutes.
This one's for you.
It's not the full thing. We'll pay the rest of it at the beginning of the next show. Sarah and the Mouse coming up with the hip hop show. We'll see you again next week. Bye.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes.